Welcome to the Aging Well podcast. I'm Jeff Armstrong, here with Corbin Bruton. In this and the episodes that follow, we will share candid discussions on aging and hear from the experts. We are here to inform and encourage as we experience, well, aging.
A common question among novice, beginner, and even advanced exercisers is, how many exercises should I do in my workout? In this episode, we consider this question as it relates to the health and neuromotor skill-related components of physical fitness, according to one's goals and the time one is willing and able to commit to exercise.
We may have discussed this in previous episodes, but the question comes up often. How many exercises should I do in my workout? There was an article recently in your favorite Men's Health. It wasn't very good.
No surprise.
But I thought it might be a good topic for the Aging Well podcast.
I don't recall that we have discussed this specifically in another episode, but I'm sure we have alluded to it from time to time. I agree. This is a good topic for the Aging Well podcast. Where do we start?
Well, let's start with the question. How many exercises should I do in my workout?
5.
Okay. Well, that's it. Thanks for listening and keep aging well.
Not so quick. The answer isn't that simple, and it's not necessarily 5. The accurate answer requires a few more questions in response.
Such as?
Well, to begin with, what are your goals? In addition, how much time are you able to contribute to your exercise sessions?
How much time are you willing to contribute to your exercise sessions?
Absolutely. We can probably all make more time to exercise.
Does age play a factor?
Maybe. I prefer to consider recoverability rather than categorizing an exerciser based on age. Nevertheless, individual characteristics such as age, gender, training experience, and so forth will factor in.
One must consider the landmark volumes, such as minimum effective volumes and maximum recoverable volume.
And other activities that might affect recoverability.
And when considering the number of exercises, one must consider the health-related and neuromotor skill-related components of physical fitness.
Which brings us back to goals and the amount of time we are willing to dedicate to exercise. Remind the listeners, what are the health-related and neuromotor skill-related components of physical fitness?
Yeah, the health-related components of physical fitness are cardiorespiratory endurance, muscle strength, body composition, and flexibility. The neuromotor skill-related components of physical fitness are speed, power, agility, balance, coordination, and reaction time.
And which of these is most important?
See, that now that's a trick question, isn't it?
It is.
Well, they're all important, but what's the most important? I guess that will depend on an individual. What does the individual need the most? And then what are their weaknesses?
I teach a training continuum.
Ah, the principle of specificity. The body system makes specific adaptation to imposed demands.
The said principle. So when we are managing our exercise time, we need to consider what areas we need to work on. Opportunity cost.
Opportunity cost. What we do either works towards our goal or against our goal.
We want to optimize our time.
All right. So the first step is to determine how much time we're willing to contribute to exercise.
And how many sessions?
Well, ACSM recommends 300 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week.
That's a start. 300 minutes over 6 exercise sessions is 50-minute sessions.
So you would prefer 6 sessions per week?
Minimally, yes. ACSM suggests 5 60-minute sessions. But yes, I prefer 6 or more.
Or more?
Yes, I would favor up to 12 sessions per week. Not necessarily 60 minutes, though.
12 sessions? Wow.
That's to manage time constraints and to optimize time for strength and cardio.
What would you recommend to optimize your time so you can squeeze in these 12 sessions?
Well, obviously, not everybody has 2-hour blocks that they could go to the gym and get everything done. And for most of us, it's really just carving out time throughout the day to be able to exercise. I mean, ACSM and their guidelines will talk about 5-10 minute cardio sessions interspersed throughout the day can have the same benefits as a single block of, say, 30 minutes of cardio. And so when we start to argue that we don't have the time to exercise, we really just have to kind of look at our day and where can we carve out a little bit of time to be able to exercise. And I also favor compartmentalizing the exercise so that we can kind of maximize. And that's what I mean about optimizing time for strength and cardio, is carving out the time so that we can focus on strength. We're going to get the best strength stimulus or the best cardio stimulus or whatever aspect of fitness we are working on. We're carving out a time. We're focused on that. It's going to be short and effective.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. So I work about an hour each direction from where I live. And so I was really struggling with either working out in the mornings because I had to rush to get ready in order to drive, or working out in the evenings because once I got home, I really didn't have a lot of time to cook dinner and all of that. So what I just decided to do is I got a gym membership, and on my hour lunch break, I'll just go to the gym. It's only 30 minutes, but there's conveniently a gym right next to where I work. And I just try and get a quick little session in. It's something that I've recently started doing, and I'm really hoping it pays off. That's the only way I could squeeze in any time, just because the 2 hours a day of just driving, that was kind of killing me, but I had to figure something out.
Yeah, and my schedule is even worse. I mean, like you, I have over an hour drive to campus every morning. Plus, I have to drive my daughter to the high school, and we live as far as you could possibly live from the high school, and they don't provide a bus. So I have to get up in the morning, generally about 4:30. It gives me really about a 45-minute window at best to be able to get my workout in so that I can get up, get showered, get cleaned up so that my daughter can start getting ready. My wife can get ready. She can work out in the morning. I can get my meals prepped for the day and get my daughter in a car, get to campus and come home. And again, I have a small window between getting her home from school after I pick her up to maybe having strength and conditioning practice that I have to go to. And so I don't have a lot of time, but I can carve out at least 2 sessions per day. I'm trying a little bit more when I'm able, since my kind of office hours are in the exercise physiology lab. There's treadmills right there. I just hop on the treadmill and walk for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. And you know, I can be working on my computer, reading something, and it gives me a little extra activity to burn a few extra calories. And so when I talk about managing time constraints and optimizing time for strength and cardio, we have to realize that workouts don't have to be in one big block. We can do them multiple sessions. You know, you have a home gym, but you don't have a lot of time. Maybe you do a exercise in the morning and one at night. You know, whatever you have to do in order to get the cumulative benefits of exercise.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because, you know, I with every person that we've probably ever spoken to, whether it's on this podcast or just when we both used to do personal training, I think the number one excuse was I just can't find time to get that in. But, you know, there's a lot of famous quotes out there. Arnold Schwarzenegger makes a lot of them. Muhammad Ali made a lot of them. And sometimes you just gotta come down to that old tried and true time management and figure out what's important to you and what you want to prioritize. And in reality, we should all be prioritizing our health, because in the end, we all want to age well.
I always love the Arnold quote, "If you're sleeping more than 6 hours, sleep faster."
Yeah.
Now, after, you know, our recent conversations with the Playonskis, and you know, we've talked about sleep and stuff like that, I think maybe the "if you're sleeping more than 8 hours, sleep faster," right? But we want to get that 7-8 hours of sleep. But that, again, carves out a chunk of our 24-hour day. What else are we doing in that time? And how can we squeeze exercise into that?
How many cardio sessions and how many strength training sessions should we do in that 12 session split?
Again, I mean, that's a challenging question to answer because, again, it comes down to the individual. It comes down to our time constraints. But more importantly, it comes down to our goals and what are we trying to accomplish. And so I take a more prioritizing approach. So for me, and you know, we've talked about this repeatedly on the podcast recently, that over time I have shifted much more to a strength focus as opposed to a cardio focus for my aging well, because I know that I need to maintain that muscle mass. That's going to have the best effect on my body composition. It's also, you know, preserving my ability to be active. And I know that what cardio I have, and I'm fairly fit cardio-wise, I can maintain that in much shorter sessions and it's not as much of a priority. And so I focus on my strength sessions in the morning. So I look at minimal of 6 strength sessions per week and then trying to carve out a little bit more cardio sessions. And ideally, it would be another 6 cardio sessions per week. That's where I get up to that 12. So if I do strength in the morning for, say, 30, 40 minutes, and then in the afternoon, I can do a cardio session in as little as 15, 20 minutes. And so if I get up in the morning and I can get my weight workout in, I get through my workday, if stuff happens throughout the day that suddenly that window of opportunity to be able to exercise in the afternoon closes on me, then I could skip the cardio. And so another reason for trying to maximize the number of sessions is we are preparing for greater availability to exercise. And if stuff happens, our schedules get complicated, or you get up one particular morning and you didn't sleep well and you're going to skip a strength workout, you've scheduled other sessions throughout the week to be able to get more training volume in without completely disrupting your schedule or feeling like I totally screwed up this week. I missed an entire workout. I'm not going to get the strength gains, or I'm not going to get the cardio gains that I've been looking at. Does that make sense?
Kind of. It seems like we should just always prioritize strength training. And I don't know, I just feel like with cardio, and I know you've said this before, it's really easy to maintain that cardio. And even based off of this time management and on what to prioritize, it just seems if we prioritize more resistance training and strength training, well, as a result, we're also balancing our cardiovascular simultaneously, because, you know, your heart's pumping, your blood's flowing, and if you're pushing yourself on the heavy, heavy end, I mean, there should be a cardio aspect of that. Am I incorrect in thinking that way?
A little bit. I mean, again, we need to train across the training spectrum. I mean, if what you were saying was true, then we wouldn't have so many bodybuilders and powerlifters that die young.
Right.
You know, they're particularly powerlifters. They lift very heavy. They amass tremendous amounts of muscle mass, but they're not doing cardio. I mean, you see some of these powerlifters, and I'm not knocking any of them. Part of it's genetics as well, but they kind of waddle when they walk, you know, and they don't move very fast. Some of them, I mean, they'll be breathing heavy going up the steps. You know, they're carrying a tremendous amount of weight up the steps, and they're not very fit, you know, cardiovascularly. So we need to really have some prioritization of cardio for our health. That's why we have health benefits, and then we have neuromotor skill-related benefits, because that runs that spectrum of aging well. And so when strength is a priority, we want to take as minimal amount of time as possible to stimulate muscle hypertrophy, to stimulate strength increases. But then we also are doing that optimally to be able to provide more time to be able to do more, you know, some cardio. And again, if you look at the Tabata research, you can improve your cardiorespiratory endurance pretty effectively in really only about 12 minutes of cardio, you know, a few times a week. And so do some cardio, but you don't have to put as much time into that cardio. You know, a lot of people say, I got to do cardio. They go out and they're doing 45-minute hour workouts. That's not benefiting them as much as cutting that workout in half or even a quarter and taking more of that time and putting it towards strength training.
Yeah, but if you're taking, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and you're just doing, you know, steady state cardio and you're just running, I feel like you're not going to get as many benefits as if you shorten it down and you do more, say, if you're, say you're around a track and, you know, you sprint as hard as you can for as long as you can. And then you do a little 1 minute jog around the track and then you sprint again. Maybe it's only for 30 seconds. I feel like you're going to get more benefits that way. And you're spiking your heart rate and you're lowering it and you're spiking it and you're lowering it. So you're getting the cardiovascular aspect of it, but then you're also pushing yourself a little harder. So you're firing those muscles that you wouldn't necessarily do in a low steady state cardio.
Well, again, it's that continuum. And that's where I think as well, when we start looking at the number of sessions, you want to be considering intensity as part of that to work across the spectrum. You know, the lower intensity is going to allow us more activity to burn more calories to, you know, improve maybe some of the lower end of the VO2 max, more improving stroke volume and things like that. And when we get into higher intensities, then we start engaging the muscles a bit more to where we're getting a little bit more maybe muscle endurance. We're getting more effect at the muscle level where we're affecting the arteriovenous oxygen difference. And then as the intensity increases, eventually we start transitioning from really cardio work to muscle endurance work. And that's where high intensity interval training and high intensity interval resistance training all come into play. Now we start getting a little bit more, not so much muscle hypertrophy out of it, but we're working the muscles a little bit more. We're burning more fat. We're improving to some extent cardio, but the cardiovascular benefits start to diminish as we move closer and closer towards strength. And so we want to be shifting that dial back and forth across the spectrum from pure cardio to pure strength within the boundaries of our goals and our opportunity to be able to exercise, but also, you know, what our current health status is. Because for some people, jumping right into high intensity interval training is not going to be healthy for them. They could be at risk of heart attacks and things like that. And so just simply moving some is going to benefit them. But doing the strength is going to give them the capacity to do a little bit more movement. And a lot of times people just, you know, oh, I'm so out of shape. I just got to get some cardio going. And all they do is kind of go out and walk. And it's going to take them longer to get to a more fit level because they're focused only on that really low intensity cardio and trying to burn fat, which is not helping us necessarily to build muscle and improve performance.
Okay, so back to the original question. How many exercises should I do in my workout?
Well, I generally presume that question to be about weight training. Cardio, of course, is about duration. And as we've kind of been talking about, I favor high intensity interval training for cardio because it is effective and it is time efficient. And like I mentioned, you can see benefits in as little as 12 to 15 minutes when we're doing high intensity interval type training.
Every day?
Probably not. You must consider recoverability. 3 hard days a week is probably good for most. With 3 or more moderate intensity sessions per week, it is really highly individualized.
Okay, so what about weights?
Again, how much time can you dedicate? I think 3 to 6 days a week is ideal, 2 to 3 times per week per body part.
Okay, so that brings us to the question of how many exercises?
It does. And again, the answer comes down to goals and time.
So you call them the basic 5, but I like to call them the superior 7.
To each his own. The basic 5, the squat, the deadlift or hip hinge, the bench, the row, and the overhead press, plus core exercises like carries, give us the foundation for how many exercises. Expanding these to your superior 7 refines this a bit.
So, a squat variation, a hip hinge movement, a horizontal push, a vertical push, a horizontal pull, a vertical pull, and a carry variation performed each at least twice a week?
Pretty much. On top of these, accessory work like bicep curls and tricep extensions, calf raises, that can all be added for what I would consider aesthetics.
So with 3 to 5 exercises per workout, one can hit the muscle groups they need to age well,
I believe so, and with pretty good time efficiency. Now, we should note that for bodybuilders and athletes, the needs might be greater. In general, though, we successful agers can maintain and even gain muscle mass and manage our body composition quite well with few exercises.
So you mentioned body composition. This is one of the health-related components of physical fitness. How many exercises for body composition? How does one train to improve body composition?
Good points. Good questions. Body composition is really the cumulative effect of diet and the activities that we do on a regular basis. Body composition improves with added muscle mass, so strength training is important. Body composition improves with reduced body fat, so endurance or cardio activities, simply moving more, is important. Most important for improved body composition is zeroing in on a healthy diet and caloric balance.
And what about the neuromotor skill-related components of physical fitness? Speed, power, agility, balance, coordination, and reaction time.
Unfortunately, a lot of exercise professionals see these more as sports-related than health-related. So they are often ignored in programming for the aging exerciser.
So train like an athlete to age well.
No, that is a trend in fitness that really bothers me. Either we are BSing the exerciser by telling him that they are, quote, training like an athlete, unquote, or we are setting the exerciser up for injury. Athletes train for above normal performance. They beat the crap out of their bodies to outperform the competition. They aren't necessarily setting themselves up for aging well. We want to train to maintain a healthy lifestyle and for longevity.
So how then does one incorporate the neuromotor skill-related fitness components?
How and how much goes back to goals and to needs? Agility, balance, and coordination are obvious. How we train for strength and endurance can account for these. Unilateral versus bilateral exercises, multidirectional movement, varying the tempo of movements and cardio, as well as strength exercises. Remember, too, that balance is the sum of strength and posture.
Balance. So how do you feel about exercises on BOSU balls or physio balls?
Well, they have their place, but man, they are overdone in the gym.
Why do you think that is?
Basically, there is little transference. The exerciser gets better at standing on one foot on a BOSU ball, but very little of that effort translates into increased strength. Don't get me wrong. Many of these exercises are great for rehabilitation and prehabilitation. They can also be good for pre-activating some of the smaller stabilizer muscles. But when the limiting factor in the movement is the small muscles, the big muscles don't get stressed enough. Work on strength and posture. Strength plus posture equals balance.
In our years with Athletic Republic, we did a lot of agility work with athletes. How does that transfer to the athlete or adult that wants to age well?
Well, you know, I love John Frappier's plyometric floor and drills.
Yeah, the four square plyo floor.
Yes. And for the older adult, these need not be high intensity, but simply stepping in multidirectional patterns can benefit agility, balance, and coordination. Dancing is also a great activity for this. For anyone, though, I think it's also important to consider cognitive or reactive agility.
Reactive changes in direction rather than prescribed movement patterns.
And we might have to do an episode on just training for agility.
Yeah, because that's a lot to discuss there. The same could be said for reaction training.
Indeed.
We haven't discussed flexibility.
We have not.
So how often and how many exercises should one train for flexibility?
As often and as many as necessary.
Well, that's kind of vague.
The answer is kind of vague. The reason being that everyone has different flexibility needs. If you're already sufficiently flexible, you don't need to spend any significant time stretching if you are exercising regularly through a full range of motion.
So what do you mean by sufficiently flexible?
I mean having a sufficient pain-free range of movement to be able to perform the required tasks of daily living. Not everyone has to be as flexible as a gymnast.
So spend time doing flexibility exercises for the joints that are least flexible and don't spend excessive time stretching what is already flexible?
Exactly. You can't fix what isn't broken.
So back to the original question, how many exercises should I do in my workout? The answer is as few as necessary within the time permitted to train the basic movement patterns, such as improve cardiorespiratory endurance, muscle strength, body composition, flexibility, speed, power, agility, balance, coordination, and reaction time.
Pretty much. Be smart and effective with exercise programming. Don't waste time on the unnecessary. Prioritize according to importance and need.
Do these things and you will age well.
Age well.
Thank you for listening. I hope you benefited from today's podcast. And until next time, keep aging well.